Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 6, 2014, or as if 2018, we will start our first service today with a song entitled, I Love to Tell the Story. I love to tell the story of unseen things above, of Yahshua and His glory, of Yahshua and His love. I love to tell the story because I know it is true. It satisfies my longing as nothing else can do. I love to tell the story, will be my theme in glory, to tell the old story of Yahshua and His love. I love to tell the story, more wonderful it seems, and all the golden fancy, all the golden dream. I love to tell the story, it did so much for me, and that is just the reason I tell it now to thee. I love to tell the story, will be my theme in glory, to tell the old story of Yahshua and His love. I love to tell the story, it's pleasant to repeat, but seems each time I tell it, oh, wonderfully sweet. I love to tell the story, so some have never heard the message of salvation from Yah's own holy word. I love to tell the story, will be my theme in glory, to tell the old story of Yahshua and His love. I love to tell the story for those who know it best, seems hungering and thirsting to hear it like the rest. And when in scenes of glory I sing the new song, will be the old story that I have loved so long. I love to tell the story, will be my theme in glory, to tell the old story of Yahshua and His love. A Study in Typology, Part 2. We're on 12th Symbolic Code Number 5. We're on page 16 for those that are following. We're going to do a little review. On page 15 it says, we shall now devote a few moments to the study of the Jacob, the type, in relation unto the church in the antitype. So we're the antitypical church of the Jacob today. It says, when Jacob left his home in Padan Aram, while he was on his way when Jacob left his home in Palestine, while he was on his way to Padan Aram, Elohim met him and gave him his promises that he would be with him, and Elohim fulfilled his promises. Likewise, when the church left the vineyard, Elohim's promise was with her that he would not forsake her in the Gentile world. While Jacob was in Padan Aram, away from home, he became very rich, and his household increased greatly. Then he was commanded to return home. So it will be today in the Antitype. The time will come when the church is to be multiplied and then return home. But when Jacob left his father-in-law's house and was on his way back to Palestine, you remember, that he had his great time of the trouble. It happened before he reached Palestine, his homeland. He wrestled in the anguish all night with the Yahweh, and it was then that his name was changed from Jacob unto Israel. We are not now living in the antitypical time of the changed name, Israel, but we are living in the antitypical Jacob's time. You might say that Jacob is the fleshly name, a name that does not spell either prince or saint. Why are we still in the time portrayed by the Jacob sin denoting name? Because we have not yet started for home. When we start for home as did Jacob, we too shall meet with our time of the trouble, even Jacob's time of the trouble, and at that time we shall become thoroughly converted unto Elohim forever, and our name will be changed as is foretold in Isaiah 61:6, and it will be a name that the Yahweh himself will give us. When we demonstrate that we are truly converted, then this great promised blessing will come unto us, and when our name has been changed, it signifies that we are certain candidates for the entrance into the everlasting kingdom of the heaven eternal. In our study today, we have traveled over the road the church has gone through its long history. Our journey brought us through the patriarchal period and then the temporal kingdom age and on to the sojourn of the church in the Gentile nation. It has brought us to the place that we find ourselves now, on the verge of leaving for the kingdom eternal, which also means that we are about to go through our time of trouble and have our name changed, then to be accepted into the kingdom which Elohim is about to set up that shall last forever. Now, where are we at today? We're in Padan Aram. We're in the Gentile world. That's why we are having our time of Jacob's trouble now in the Antitype, no doubt. It's happening unto Yahweh's people all over the world. Let us continue. For the next few minutes, we shall depart from the overall application of the allegories unto the living church through the ages, and let us also see what lessons there is in it for Elohim's church at this time. The natural birth that Rebekah gave unto her twins, Esau and Jacob, symbolizes the church giving spiritual birth unto two classes of people, one good and one bad. We know that this took place in 1970 at Gilead Center. We know that that's when this antitypical birth happened. though contrary unto established custom, the blessing was to be bestowed upon the younger. It denotes that in the latter day, a church experienced the class which should receive the spiritual blessing will forfeit it in the favor of the other, the younger class. From one of these twins is to come the 12 tribes of the children of Israel, the spiritual children of Israel, the 144,000 first fruits. When the time comes for the 144,000 to be born, the class represented by Esau are to have first opportunity to realize the privilege of leading the 144,000 who are to usher in the kingdom over which Yahshua is to rule. Okay. So as I just read, from one of these twins is to come the 12 tribes of the children of Israel, the spiritual children of Israel, 144,000 first fruit. Okay, so Verlis Johnson at 1970, he said that the Lord spoke to him and told him 144,000 has been assigned to his movement. And I suppose that's what gave him his greatest enthusiasm for bringing forth this here kingdom that he brought forth, and to anticipate the 144,000 coming somewhere into his kingdom, hopefully in the near future. He certainly prophesied it from 1974, just 3.5 years after 1970 began. He prophesied that we would meet the 144,000, stand on Mount Zion in Israel with the Lamb. We know by now that didn't happen. And so by 1998, Brother Johnson, he made this track we just got to finish with, Call of the Vanguard, and he was showing where the 144,000 is going to come forth pretty soon from then. And that was 24 years. And this 2008 would be 34 years. And another 8 years would be 42 years. That's 42 years ago in 1974 when he first prophesied the 144,000 would come forth. And we're still looking for the 144,000. And so, I'm saying that Jacob had to fulfill 50 years of his life before he is to return back to his homeland with his 12 sons. That would be today, the 144,000. Okay, when the time comes for the 144,000 to be born, the class represented by the Esau are to have first opportunity to realize the privilege. See? First opportunity to realize the privilege of leading the 144,000 who are to usher in the kingdom over which Yahshua is to rule. When Sister White, the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, first began her work, she had a vision concerning the gathering of the 144,000, which was to be the work of the church. In the terms of the allegory then, the Seventh-day Adventist church was travailing with the antypical twins and was to give birth unto the Jacobites and Esauites, who are the ones that would be classified Esauites, and who are the ones that would be classed as the Jacobites. For the two people that are in the church now, the Esauites would be those that are older in the Adventist message, those that came first and led the Jacobites, the younger ones, into the church. And as it was the younger, all through church history, that cherished the spiritual blessing which the older ones should have possessed for themselves, so it is that the younger children in the Advent truth, Elohim's true church today, is to carry on the line of the living church. The others, the older ones, whose right it was by the birth to be the leaders of the 144,000 princesses, standing with the Lamb on the Mount Zion, are going to lose out. When the Sister White first saw the coming of these 12,000 out of the 12 tribes, it indicated that the church was travailing with them, and they were soon to be born. From that time until 1930, when the Shepherd Rod message came, there was no more truth revealed concerning the 144,000. And since the Rod message explained who are the 144,000 and announced that now is the time for them to appear, then we may know that they, the Jacobites, were born, so to speak, from the time the message came. Alright, now the Jacobites were born in 1970, anatypically, according to the allegory. So, Jacob being the father of the 12 sons, that is a type of the 144,000. So then we have to conclude then that the 144,000 were born in 1970 to the Adventist Church. And she was born at, and they were born at Gilead Center. Well, they were born after 1970, because when Jacob took four wives and patted around, then that began to bring forth his 12 sons. And he brought them forth one at a time. And so there you have it. The 144,000 being born in 1970, anatypically, then you had a period of time where they would have to appear one at a time. Okay. But the Jacobites are not yet on Mount Zion with the Lamb. Instead, they are in the antitypical pattern of Ram, where Elohim is sustaining them, apart from the Esauites in the church. That is, while one part of the Adventists are in Washington, D.C., and the other part is in the Texas, they are unable to get along together. According to the type we are studying, and also prophecy, the Jacobites are about to gather themselves and leave the Gentile nation to return unto their homeland, Palestine. And on their way they will meet Esau and have their name changed to Israel. Since Esau, however, did not go into the Gentile nations, or unto the Gentile nations, but it was Jacob who left and came here, there must be Esauites also in Palestine, meaning in the land of Israel proper. Is that not correct? Though it is true that we are connected with the Edomites in the church, those who despise their birthright and whom Elohim would therefore take away, it is equally true that there are other Esauites besides, for the Esauites in the Seventh-day Adventist church are not all of them. No, they are not all of the Esauites. In addition to the Esauites that are in the Adventist church, there are Esauites in Palestine, and there are also Esauites in other churches too. In other words, in other Seventh-day Adventist churches that have to be. And from them, other Jacobites must be gathered. Do you not see that the Esauites are going to be enraged with the Elohim's people and give them trouble behind and a bigger trouble ahead? And besides all the trouble Jacob will suffer from Esau, he is also to have Laban running after him. Somebody typified by the Laban will pursue antitypical Jacob for the trouble. It is very apparent then that Elohim's people will have much trouble among themselves on the way and ahead. Trouble is what they face. But Elohim will take care of them today as he did anciently. He has promised that he will remove the Edomites in the church, and he has promised also to clear away the Edomites and all of the others that are in the land of the promise and give it unto his people. So now, who do we have that we were separated from at Gilead Center in 2002? We were separated from the Edomites and from their leader, antitypical Esau, Brother Stephen Johnson. We were separated from the temporal kingdom of Israel that antitypical King Saul also allegorically was presiding over, and that was Brother Stephen Johnson, also in 2002. Okay. That brought to an end also all the Achans, representative of the last of the Achans in the church, when that came to pass. That ended the priesthood of Eli, and typical Eli allegorically, in 2002 at Kermit. And the beat just goes on and on for the different allegories that came into play there. It says, if we had a representation of the Seventh-day Adventist Church here, along with the Protestant and Catholic representations, and if we could at one presentation show them the vast amount of truth which we have been blessed with both from typology and prophecy, they would be amazed and confounded, just as the woman of Samaria who talked with Yahshua at the well exclaimed, because he was able to reveal all that she had ever done, they, too, would ask, where did this people learn so much about what is going to happen? Where did we get it? Who is the one that predicted all this? To find our answer, we will read again Isaiah 41:4 and verse 20. Who hath wrought and done it, calling the generation from the beginning? I, the Yahweh, the first, and with the last, I am He. That they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Yahweh hath done this, and the Holy One of Israel hath created it. What effect does all this truth have upon your heart? Does it not inspire within you the consuming desire for the possession of the promised spiritual blessings that can be ours? Are you not becoming daily more intimately acquainted with the Elohim and becoming hid away in Him, that you may be protected in the storm which will soon break upon His people? Those who prevail with the Elohim for His blessing will be delivered and know no defeat. For the closing out of this sermon, as far as 12 symbolic code number 5, this finishes this part for the typology. We're going to continue on into the next sermon that V.T. Holliff had on this 12 symbolic code number 6 and 7. And he's going to deal with the baptism of the water, baptism of the fire, and the Yahshua Supper. First, we're going to read the closing poem that was written here for this sermon. It says, entitled, In the Hour of Trial. In the hour of trial, Father, strengthen me, lest by base denial I depart from thee. When thou seest me waver with a touch recall, nor from thy dear favor suffer me to fall. With the forbidden pleasures would this vain world charm, or its sordid treasure spread to work me harm. Grant that I may never fail thy hand to see. Grant that I may ever cast my care on thee. Amen. That's written by J. Montgomery. We're going to go into 11 symbolic code number 5. And we're going to add that to what we just got through doing. So it says, review the revelation of 11:1-13 and its typology. Well, the purpose of this article is to impress upon the minds of those of the 12 tribes scattered abroad that Elohim has not left his faithful people at sea without chart or compass. He has made plain his course so that his elect may be able to follow him whatsoever he goeth. Since it is only through the more sure word of the prophecy that Elohim's plan is conveyed unto us, there is then no other place for us to turn for the enlightenment. And as Revelation 11 was the last prophecy revealed to us, and since the first 13 verses refer to our time, it is most essential, therefore, that we fail not to give it our careful attention. In our review of it, we shall briefly study it verse by verse and conclude with the typology for the prophecy. To get the sitting for the Revelation 11, however, it is necessary first to refer to the last several verses in chapter 10. And that would be verses 8 through 10. And the voice which I heard from the heavens spake unto me again and said, Go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel, which standeth upon the sea and upon the earth. And I went unto the angel and said unto him, give me the little book. And he said unto me, take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as the honey. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up, and it was in my mouth sweet as honey, and as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. These verses foretell of the William Miller's message by the explaining of the 2300-day prophecy of the Daniel 9:24-27 and Daniel 8:14, by which they understood that the Yeshua was to come in the October of 1844. For this message was unto the people sweet as honey. Really, when Yahshua did not come unto the earth, as he had expected, this disappointment was bitter indeed. Verse 11, and he said unto me, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. Here is a commission unto the Seventh-day Adventists after the disappointment in 1844, that they were to go unto many peoples and nations and tongues and kings to prophesy again. Revelation 11, 1 and 2. And there was given me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, rise and measure the temple of Elohim, and the altar, and them that worship therein. But the court which is without the temple leap out and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. Now this is where we're at in measuring the temple. That this is the numbering of the 144,000. And so the 144,000, as we learned earlier today in our study, that they were born anatypically in 1970. The birth of 144,000 started in 1970, with Verlis W. Johnson announcing that the Spirit spoke to him and said the 144,000 has been assigned to his movement, indicating that it was not assigned to the first 40-year period of the Adventist with the feeding pasture of Mount Bashan from 1850 to 1890, even though Ellen G. White in 1845 had her first vision concerning the 144,000. Okay, so now, the 144,000, being born then in 1970, at the very time that we had the birth of the sanctuary restored, put back into full operation, that had to be because the 144,000, it says that they sang the song of Moses and the Lamb. And the song of Moses and the Lamb was again brought forward by the Verlis W. Johnson from the prophecies of the Old Testament, where it says that Moses wrote that song and put it in the side pocket of the ark. And I believe that was in Exodus 31, about 19 on. He said he wrote that song of Moses and the Lamb, and he put it in the side part of the ark. He said to be a witness for Yahweh's people in the latter days. Okay. So, 144,000 being born after 1970 on, at the same time that the song of Moses and the Lamb is being resurrected by Verlis Johnson, and once again being taught. And it says no man can learn that song but 144,000. Well, apparently Verlis Johnson taught the song, but he didn't sing it. He only taught the song. He didn't practice it, because Nehemiah says that song was nothing but the law of Yahweh contained in a book that Moses wrote. Okay. So it says, let's continue reading now in our number 5 here of the symbolic code. Following the organization of the Seventh-day Adventist movement, the people are to be measured or numbered. Okay, so now, the Adventist movement proceeded up to 1970, and I think it's about 126 years after her birth in 1844, that it's time now to measure the temple and to number it, because you have to have the temple restored first, and before you can measure or number the occupants that are to dwell inside of it. And the 144,000 has to be numbered in the temple. All right. And as there is but one numbered group, namely 144,000, this verse brings unto the light of the ceiling of the 144,000 by the message which the 144,000 are to be measured or numbered. For the court was not to be measured, for it is given unto the Gentiles. Okay, so now the court is outside of the building itself, the tabernacle. So there are those that come into the court then to be a part of those that are inside of the building. 144,000 inside the building, the Gentiles are outside in the court. The court was not to be measured, for it is given unto the Gentiles. Then, continuing on without a break, it says that the Gentiles would tread the holy city for 42 months. Okay. All know that the holy city has been trodden under the feet of the Gentiles since 70 A.D., therefore, this 42 months coming as it does after the falling of the latter rain clearly and undeniably shows that this prophecy is speaking of the last 42 months that the Gentiles will be allowed to tread the holy city. Okay, Revelation 11, 3 and 4. And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in the sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the Yahweh of the earth. For the two witnesses are here defined to be the two olive trees, the Bible, and the two candlesticks, the true church, and power is given unto them to prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in the sackcloth. In other words, mourning. If any man would hurt the two witnesses, fire will surely proceed out of their mouth and devour their enemies. Okay, so now we have the two witnesses born also in 1970. Pay close attention to this. At the same time that Antipater Isaac was born, allegorically, and the same time that Jacob and Esau was born allegorically, at the same time 144,000 were assigned to this movement, at the same time the sanctuary system was raised up, the tabernacle of David was raised up that had fallen down. Okay. Verse 6, it says, these have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them to blood and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. For the two witnesses have power to shut up heaven, the source of the rain, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy. Okay. For the angel of the Revelation 10:1 with the book in his hand came in the time of the latter rain. Okay, so now in the time of the latter rain, that would be 2002, when the latter rain fell at the Passover. Okay. We know this because the angel was clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was over his head. Now I have something more to offer. As I woke up this morning, I asked Heavenly Father to give me a message from the Scriptures that I would open up right to whatever He wanted me to know today. And He gave me Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 26 through 28. And I'm going to read it to you. And above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was a likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. And I saw as the color of amber, as the appearance of fire round about within it, from the appearance of his loins even upward, and from the appearance of his loins even downward, I saw as it were the appearance of fire. And it had brightness round about, as the appearance of the bow as in the cloud. In the day of the rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Yahweh. When I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spake. Okay, now, as I read that, now I am reading from a symbolic code, and it's number 11, 11 symbolic code number 5, actually. And this, I'm reading about the very same thing now, that the Yahweh gave me this subject for today again. So it says, I'm rereading what I just read to you. The angel of Revelation 10:1 with a book in his hand came in the time of the latter rain. We know this because the angel was clothed with a cloud and a rainbow was over his head. So, here you have it, Revelation 10:1. And you have Ezekiel with the same prophecy of Ezekiel 1, 26 through 28. For the messages that came in this time of the rain are described in Revelation 10, 8 to 11, and Revelation 11, 1. And they are the messages that have already come to ripen the wheat for the harvest. No other message is to come for the accomplishment of this work. For no more are prophesied. Instead, we are told that these two witnesses have power to shut heaven and that it rained not in the days of prophecy. They have power to cause to cease the falling of the rain, that is, the latter rain. Then during the days of their prophecy, 1260 days or 42 months, there is not to be any new message, any new commission, any new movement. Verse 7 and 8, and when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them, and shall overcome them, and kill them. And their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which is spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Savior was crucified. Now notice this here, was is a past tense adverb, showing that when you read this prophecy, for the present tense, that Yahshua has already been crucified. And he was antipathically crucified in the message, again, in 2002, by the angel of the seventh candlestick, Brother Stephen Johnson, leading the brigade with the flock of his pasture. Now we may ask, let's continue reading now. Now we may ask, who is the beast of the bottomless pit? If the star that came from the heaven and opened the pit is the Yahshua, and if the locusts that came out of the pit are the Christians, then there is no way of escaping the conclusion that the beast which came out of the bottomless pit is symbolical of Christendom. Thus it is that the Yahshua was crucified there. Well, where is this Christendom at? This is a Gilead center. This is where the door of the bottomless pit was at. This is the headwaters. This is where Yahshua came down with the key in 2002. And what did he open up? He opened up a Pandora's box. For inside this pit, inside of the prison there is a message for the 12th hour to deliver all of the saints, starting with the living, the 144,000. There is a message in there with that new servant, Elijah David, also being shut up in that pit, along with the rest of the Christians. And when Yahshua came down to the key to set the captives free, what did he do? The first one that he set free was those that were signing and crying against the abominations that was in that pit at Gilead Center. Deliver the leadership first. Deliver the antitypical Elijah David. By Elijah delivering his message from heaven to the angel of the candlestick, Rollis Johnson, on July 14, 2002, that is what delivered his soul and those that were with him, his wife and one other. Okay, that's what delivered their soul, by me delivering that message from heaven. That was their deliverance. Okay, that's what opened up the bottomless pit. That new revelation, that message from heaven, and I told her that this message just came from heaven. So what was that message then? That was the message of the angel with the key to the bottomless pit that was in heaven, and that message came from there. And what did he say to Elijah David? That he's laid the keys of David upon his shoulders. That's in Isaiah 22:21-22. Okay. And that's the same keys that he gave to Peter when he says, I'm going to give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Those keys were passed on to William Miller in 1833. And William Miller then, those keys have been held by Yahshua ever since 1844. Okay. And those keys were then given to Elijah David in 2002. And in essence, then, what are those keys that Elijah David had to the kingdom? He had the same keys that Yahshua had to open up the prison door. Those are one of the same key to let the captives go free. First captives that was entered to be set free is 144,000. Okay, let us go on. Now that the city is spiritually called Egypt, Egypt, it denotes that it is holding Elohim's people into slavery. The name Sodom denotes that Elohim's true people will have to be rescued from it, as was Lot, Tiny Reading, Volume 2, Number 15, Pages 11 and 12. Alright, now continuing with the prophecy of the two witnesses, verses 9 through 12. In chapter 11 of Revelation, it says, and they of the people and kindreds and tongues and nations shall see their dead bodies 3 days and a half, and shall not suffer their dead bodies to be put in the grave. And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry, and shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwelt on the earth. And after 3 days and a half, the spirit of life from the Elohim entered into them, and they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them. And they heard a great voice from the heavens saying unto them, come up hither. And they ascended up into heaven in a cloud, and their enemies beheld them. For these verses make plain that at the end of the 1260 days, or 42 months, when the two witnesses shall have finished their testimony, verse 7, they are to be killed by Christendom, but that their enemies will be surprised at their unholy feast in the celebration of the short-lived victory, which is the last but 3.5 days, 3.5 years, 42 months. Now, folks, I want to show you something. In 1998, Rollis Johnson was told to sanctify the congregation at the Atonement. And we had a lady that had joined us with her husband. And her husband had been with us, had joined us way back about 19 years earlier. 17, 18, 19 years. And he went away and got him a new wife, and he'd come back. And his new wife joined us. And she went in rebellion about the head covering. And so at the Atonement 1998, she said she was not going to cover her head. And Brother Johnson told her she had to, but she refused to do it. So he said, well, let's just go on with the service then. And so the Spirit spoke to me right then and there and said, you know, Brother Johnson was supposed to sanctify the congregation to get their sins blotted out here at the Atonement. So I remember that in 2002 at the Passover, that marked a 3.5 year period after Yahweh told Brother Johnson at the Atonement of 1998. Because, see, Brother Johnson was celebrating also the year of Jubilee when the captives were set free. That's what he told us. He said the 1998 is the 50th year since 1848. Since Israel became a nation, said we have a Jubilee year this year when Yahweh is going to set the captives free and everybody's going to be free. And so that's what that Atonement was all about, was to sanctify the congregation. Actually, you sanctify the congregation 12 days later at the Solemn Assembly, those that got their sins blotted out at the Atonement. Well, anyway, we numbered 3.5 years, and that brought us to the Passover of 2002. And I prophesied to Brother Johnson that 3.5 years of what was taking place in the church. Okay. So Brother Johnson kicked me out in the year of 2002 at the end of that 3.5 year period that I prophesied unto him about what was going on truly in the church. And he kicked me out, and it says right here that and so the two witnesses, the Old and New Testament, that's when they were killed at the antipodal crucifixion of Yahshua in 2002 at the Passover. Okay, that's when he kicked his enemy out of the church. And what did he say when he kicked me out of the church? He says, now we can have a good atonement coming up, and we can have a peaceful atonement, and Yahweh can sanctify his church now, and we can have a peaceful atonement, and we can now continue on doing Yahweh's work without the interference of the enemy anymore in the church. And the prophecy here says that this celebration, this unholy feast, and the celebration of their short-lived victory. Well, just as soon as that atonement was over, Brother Johnson rocks along for 6 more months, and come to Passover 2003, the Holy Spirit arranged for him to talk with me over the phone, and I invite him in the Passover week of 2003 to come and break over and repent of all of his sins for the last 33 years and to come and join us. And Yahweh would forgive him of all of his sins and bring everybody with us. And I would be appointed as a new leader, and Brother Johnson and his whole congregation didn't have to come in under a new leadership, under a new movement with Antipodal David in charge. And he refused that. And right after that Passover 2003 then, Brother Johnson's church fell apart. His son, ordained minister Daniel, went back to his hometown where he lived in Odessa, and he went and rejoined the Adventist church there. And my sister was a member of that church, and she monitored that situation, and she led in getting him kicked out of the church. And she called me up and she said, Daniel Johnson's been here exactly 3.5 years, and she said, I helped get him kicked out of here. And so that 3.5 years then represented as 7 years complete from 1998 until the time that I had prophesied, started prophesying to the Gilead Center, the two witnesses. I'm just going to tell you, you're looking at it right here. Alright, verse 13. And the same hour was there a great earthquake, and a tenth part of the city fell, and in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000, and the remnant were affrighted, and gave glory unto the Elohim of heaven. A tenth part of the city must represent the Yahshua's part, the tithe, so to speak. The earthquake, therefore, represents a shaking in the church, and that would be from the living spirit of prophecy in their midst, which is called the true witness, and also that a prophet had been in their midst. Now, I read Ezekiel's whole chapter 1 this morning that Yahweh gave me before I came into this study. Now, I want to read you also what Yahweh gave me this morning in my early worship this morning. I got up. He gave me Ezekiel chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. And he said unto me, Son of man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak unto thee. And the Spirit entered into me when he spake unto me, and set me upon my feet, and I heard him that spake unto me. And he said unto me, Son of man, I send thee unto the children of Israel, unto a rebellious nation that hath rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me, even unto this very day. Now, Vitihara says that Ezekiel is a prophet for the last days, and the prophet that interprets his prophecies is the one who is the Son of Man. And this happens to be Elijah David then, represented by Ezekiel here. And verse 4, For they are impudent children and stiff-hearted. I do send thee unto them, and thou shalt say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh Elohim. Well, he sent me unto them in 1970, right out of the Adventist church. And it says, And they, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, for they are a rebellious house, yet shall know that there hath been a prophet among them. Now, Yahshua sent me first back to the Adventist church in about 1967, and I rejoined the Adventist church. And I was there for about 3 years prophesying unto them, and getting them so mad at me just as an Adventist, because I want to study on the subject of 144,000, and they accused me of being an old shepherd rod because I just wanted to study about the 144,000 in their midst. So by 1970, he sent me from the Adventist Church proper to the Branch Davidian Seventh-day Adventist Church that's about to get started up with Brother Johnson in 1970. And so I continued prophesying unto him. I left the Adventist Church, and so this is the prophecy right in Ezekiel 2. Verse 5, And they, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, and they wouldn't hear in the Adventist church, and then he sent me unto the Branch Davidian, for they are a rebellious house, yet shall know that there hath been a prophet among them. So when they rebuild and come to their end in 2002, he says they're going to know then, when it's over with, that a prophet had been among them. Okay, it says the tenth part of the city must represent the Yahshua's part, the tithe, so to speak. The earthquake, therefore, represents a shaking in the church at Gilead Center, the third step of the genuine movement of Seventh-day Adventists, and the third feeding pasture for the remnant who give glory unto Elohim, which would be the 144,000. Brother John said that they were assigned unto his movement, and I believe that they were assigned to his movement because that's where their birth began, and typically was in 1970. To give glory unto Elohim can only be the faithful who survived the shaking. And you know who survived the shaking? The 144,000. Is the church purified? Thus is the church purified. Those that survived the shaking. Well, the house of David, the wave sheaf offering, survived the first shaking. This earthquake, then, is symbolical of the slaughter of Ezekiel 9. There it is. Okay, now I'm going to coincide with Isaiah 66:16, Timely Reading, Volume 2, number 15, and page 12. All right. So anyway, it says that, Sister Christ says in Volume 3 of the Testimonies, 266-267, she said the clothes were for the Seventh-day Adventist Church is the seal of the 144,000. So, we have to conclude then that the sealing work began after, then I'd have to upgrade this, after 2006 when Daniel Johnson was kicked out of the Adventist Church, closing out a 7-year period from 1998 until 2000, I believe, until 2005, 2006, when my sister called me and told me that he had been there 3.5 years representing his church from Kermit. And vehemently denying that he was representing, he said, I was never a shepherd rod, he said, I never was. He says, I was there for all 32 years, but I never believed that stuff. He said, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, and that's all I am. Okay, so it says, since there can be no truth where there is no type, and shall now give attention unto the typology of revelation of for your aid, a chart is next given, and it is suggested that you carefully follow the chart as you read the explanation given after it. And they have a chart here. Okay, that's another study. We're getting close to the end of our study now for this section. But it says, matter of fact, we still have more to go on this number 5. So we're going to say, for the consideration is given to Elijah, whose great burden was to cast out idolatry and to set up true worship among the Elohim's people. Israel for 3 years and 6 months, or 1260 days, or 42 months, there was no rain. Okay. So now, the latter rain fell in 2002. The latter rain fell for a whole year at Kermit, Texas. And this is James 5:17 records this. There was no rain. And Luke 4:25. And during this time he hid from the face of the Ahab. At the end of that period, the great showdown on the Mount Carmel took place, in which every one of the prophets of Baal were destroyed. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces, and they said, "The Yahshua, he is Elohim, the Yahshua, he is Elohim." 1 Kings 18:39. All right. At the end of Elijah's message to Ahab was the destruction of all the false prophets in Israel. Okay, so now when 144,000 comes forth, then will be the destruction of all the false ministers in the Seventh-day Adventist Church and the Davidians worldwide. So we have yet to come then to the end of that 3.5-year period and even know when it begins. So we know that when the 144,000 comes forth and all the false prophets of Baal and the Adventist Church will be destroyed, showing that that's the end of that 3.5-year period, and typically of Elijah when he commanded the heavens that it rain not for 3.5 years. This brings the close of our study. So you can contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on the audio archives. Hear this message and more. Let us close now with a song. Work for the night is coming.
Work for the night is coming. Work through the morning hours. Work while the dew is sparkling. Work mid springing flowers. Work when the day grows brighter. Work in the glowing sun. Work for the night is coming, when man's work is done. Work for the night is coming. Work through the sunny noon. Fill brightest hours with labor. Rest comes sure and soon. Give every flying man something to keep in store. Work for the night is coming, when man works no more. Work for the night is coming, under the sunset sky. work while their bright tents are glowing.
Work for daylight flies. Work till the last beam fadeth to shine no more.
Work while the night is darkening,
when man's work is o'er.